I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Michelle Stewart began writing a blog around Easter 2013 when she was diagnosed with end-stage renal failure brought about from years of suffering anorexia and bulimia. She had months to live, and she wanted to share her story. That blog has been collected and published in a new book, Shell, a memoir. It is such a candid book about how eating disorders can ravage a body, but not the soul of a person. Throughout Ms. Stewart's writing, you see a person coming to terms with a terminal illness, sorting through all the unfinished business of life, anticipating death, and sharing a story and offering lessons that are inspiring, poignant, and necessary. Michelle Stewart died last year, the 14th of May, 2014. She was a reporter and radio host in Prince George, British Columbia, before beginning a career in communications. She served 7 years in the Ministry of Health here in British Columbia. Joining me now to talk about Michelle Stewart, her life and legacy, and this remarkable book are Karen Flello and Kirk Mason. Ms. Flello is principal at South Island Distance Education School and was Michelle's sister. Kirk Mason was Ms. Stewart's partner. He is the host of the Q Afternoon Show and news director at Victoria Radio Station 100.3 FM. This book is published by Lifetree Media. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in Victoria today, Karen Flello and Kirk Mason. Good morning, Ms. Flello.
Good morning.
And Mr. Mason, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us both. This is a wonderful book, and it breaks your heart because you realize why Michelle did this. And you know what will happen at the end, unfortunately. But you can't help but be moved by the dignity with which she comported herself in these last few months. Karen, you knew her longer. The person that we read in this book, was that the kind of person Michelle was throughout her life?
I would say it was. Michelle began her journey with this illness when she was 16, and prior to that, she was a pretty happy young girl. She had a lot of the same concerns that we all do when we're growing up, but in essence, she did well, and when she developed the mental illness, it changed her. But she was always so clever, so funny, so compassionate, and she had a huge heart, and those things that come through in the book, they were a big part of who she was all the way through her life.
Even at the end, she was still very grateful, very thankful for you guys, but the people around her.
Even, very much so.
Even if you just sent a note, and you knew her from years ago, and you sent a note just to say hi, she appreciated that.
Absolutely.
One of the things that this book does is tell us about the struggle of anorexia and bulimia. Some people listening to this might wonder how you get those conditions. Would you shed some light, Karen, on how that happened in Michelle's life?
Well, eating disorders are extremely complex, and at the time that Michelle was first diagnosed, there wasn't a whole lot known relative to today. But what we know now is that there is a fairly hefty genetic component, so predisposition, and we certainly had, and it's connected to depression and anxiety, and those things were in our extended family. But there are also triggers. We had some things that happened to us when we were very young. We lost our father. Michelle was 3 and I was 5. He died of cancer. We had a younger brother who has Down syndrome, and our mother was encouraged by her family, as a newly single mom now, a widow with 3 little children, to give him up. So we had some losses. We had some sad things in our family as we were young. I mean, we had some great things too. My mother remarried and married the man who is our dad, who raised us. Mm-hmm. But we had some losses, and those things, along with perhaps a genetic predisposition, sort of set her up. And then she writes in the book about suffering a sexual assault when she was 15, that certainly was, she certainly identified that as a major trigger.
And so is there not a cure, but is there some way to manage it if one has these conditions?
Oh, there is cure. I think at least that's what the doctors say. And And I think there is management as well. And I, one of the big things is very early intervention. Michelle did not have the benefit of that.
Mm-hmm.
We tried early intervention, but it just wasn't good intervention. It wasn't knowledgeable and it wasn't compassionate. It was based on focusing on the behavior rather than on the things that contributed to it, the mental illness behind it. So absolutely there is cure. People are, live healthy, strong lives, and we do have doctors who can help them and therapies that can help them.
Kirk, how long were you and Michelle together?
We were together 16 years.
And how long into the relationship did you find out about Michelle having anorexia and bulimia?
When we decided to cohabitate, to move in together and be a couple together, we were actually just renting a condo at the time, and it was difficult for her because my daughter was a teenager then and was living with us, and we were in a one-bathroom condo, which was obviously pretty difficult for Michelle. And at the time, I didn't know, my daughter didn't know, but about 4 months after we moved in together, she took me aside one day and said that she had something important she wanted to talk to me about, and she revealed her condition to me at that time, and said, I completely understand if you don't want to stay with me, and by all means, you certainly don't have to. And that wasn't an option, of course, so we were together for 16 years.
And then when she found out that she was dying, how long was that before she actually did die? I mean, that was about a year or so, was it?
Well, it was about 14 months, actually.
I see.
She was diagnosed, it was an Easter weekend in 2013, yeah.
And did she, after she was given the news, how long after that did she decide to chronicle her life and her thoughts on this blog?
I'm not sure of the timing, Joe, but I remember clearly I was at work one day, and Michelle had already resigned from the Minister of Health and was actually working on her own little communications company. And she called me and asked, had I read her blog that day, and that was the day that she sort of came out, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The blog was entitled Desperately Seeking Skinny. So I think Karen might help me out here, but I think it was probably a couple or 3 months after she was diagnosed.
Yeah, I think that particular post came out in May. So I think that was about 6 or 7 weeks after we knew of her diagnosis.
And Karen, did you think at the time that it was a good idea to do this?
Oh, absolutely. It's an interesting thing because this was a secret. It was Michelle's secret, and we maintained it for her. You know, she directed when it would, who would know if she shared it with somebody. It was something that, extended family even didn't know about. I have two adult sons, and until she was actually diagnosed with the renal failure, they didn't know, not for sure, that she had an eating disorder. So I really felt, you're hoping, uh-huh, that might be the key and the opportunity to start to heal. Of course, it was too late for her in terms of her physical healing, but I just think it's so critical that people talk openly and honestly and can be truthful about what they're experiencing and what they're suffering so that there's hope for cure, because if they hide it, there's no opportunity to treat.
So that was the goal. She wanted people to know about these conditions, and in the course of the blog and now this book, she wanted us to have a better conversation about it. I mean, she was quite explicit about that, wasn't she?
Absolutely.
And she wanted people to know that they can be cured.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How long was it into the 14 months that she decided that this was to be a book?
I think we started that conversation, at first it was, oh, wouldn't it be great if, you know, this could have a wider audience.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, those kinds of general musings started probably about November, so that would have been 6 months before she passed away.
Kirk, you lived with her throughout all of this. How would she write, and when would she write? Was there a specific time, say, or did it? Because she's an excellent writer. It seemed that she loved writing. Was it something that was easy for her, say?
I didn't witness a lot of it because I was working all day, sort of thing, and, mm-hmm. and she was certainly home and dealing with her illness and whatnot. I don't know if there was any sort of pattern to that, but some of the stuff, Joe, that she wrote so beautifully was done when she was really seriously medicated, and we were all just amazed at how the words, came out and how she structured it and how beautiful it was. So, yeah, I don't know what her writing regime was, but she certainly nailed it.
Yeah, and Karen, from a young age, was she always interested in writing?
She was. We actually were digging through some things and found some, and she actually quotes, and it's not in the book, but in the blog, she quotes some things that, writing from her 8-year-old self and those kinds of things, that school projects. She wrote, read and wrote a lot from a very early age. And she actually, had started work on a humorous novel. She had started, she had done probably 15 or 20 years before, she'd written a little novella that was written for my mother and for me. For Christmas one year, that was a humorous look at our early days when we were sort of just the three of us in the little house in Manitoba. So she was a writer, and I always thought she should have been a published author.
Yeah, and a beautiful poet as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, yeah, a lot of different genres. What she writes, of course, here this is nonfiction, but she wrote fiction. She wrote poetry. Yeah.
Did she view the writing as a catharsis? I mean, especially this blog and this book. Did it allow her to get stuff out of her that she needed for her own well-being, say?
It's funny that you say it that way, Joe. She said to me once that she had to write because she just didn't want to die with this stuff inside her. Yeah, she definitely found it to be healing.
Mm-hmm. And Kirk, at the end, do you think she was at peace? That she got out what she needed to say?
Oh, definitely, yes. She certainly was at peace. She ended up going to hospice and was there, I think, about 24 days. And she was very much at peace there, and in fact, I was at her bedside on more than one occasion, and she would just tell me how happy she was.
There's a marvelous,
great.
I mean, there's a marvelous lesson in here, not just in how to live, but in how to die, because she did it with such dignity.
Oh, she
absolutely
did.
Absolutely. I mean, that amazes me the way she handled that. Yes.
Yeah, and Karen, I mean, when you talk to people now about your sister and in the course of promoting this book, I'm sure people ask you about that in terms of just how to approach those final days, especially knowing that it's coming up shortly, say.
Well, it was an interesting thing, Joe. As Kirk says, she was in hospice, but she was the first patient in our local hospice, who actually went in with an active eating disorder. So, most people don't, if you will, die of an eating disorder. They die of renal failure or heart failure or, you know, even suicide. There are other things that appear on the death certificate, but Michelle was still active in her eating disorder, in some of her disordered behavior, and we had to make some concessions to that. For example, the family said to the nurses and the doctors that if this was to succeed and our goal in palliative care and in hospice is to usher in peaceful, peaceful death, really, mm-hmm. I guess, that there could be no food coming into the room. That the family would provide whatever she asked for, but there could be no hospital food in the room. And, you know, that was hard for the nurses. They were amazing, absolutely amazing, but it went against the grain of the kinds of care they usually give. And they needed, you know, to have some debriefing afterwards because it was just so different from anything they had experienced. But, you know, Michelle chose her terms, and we as a family supported those terms. You know, we never tried to get her to eat things. We never tried to get her to do things that she wasn't comfortable doing. And in the last 5 days, you know, we sort of say that, 200 years ago we would have said the demons had left her. She was truly at peace. And that was so good because we were, you know, we weren't sure that that was the way it would be.
Kirk, what struck me in reading the book and were the titles of some of these posts, and some of them are recognizable songs. What did she like listening to?
Oh, man. I think first and foremost, she loved R&B music. Marvin Gaye was her favorite, but she would listen to Joni Mitchell, another one of her favorites, so... She was all over the board with that. She really had an appreciation for music and loved music and loved being turned on to new artists that she'd never heard of before. And yeah, she had a wide appreciation for various genres of music.
Yeah, it's a very eclectic taste, and not only in the music, say some of the things that she watched, but the stuff that she read. She was widely read.
She was very widely read. And many, many different types of literature, and you know, nonfiction as well. She read voraciously, and in fact, one of the most difficult things for her was as she became more and more ill and was more and more medicated, she found it hard to sustain her attention to read, and that was a huge loss for her.
It was heartbreaking to read that one entry where she talks about how she was finding it difficult to read, and as you're reading it, you realize she's not going to read anymore.
Yeah, it was that was a very, very difficult thing for her to know that you know, books were not going to be her her escape anymore.
Yeah, the most difficult thing that we had to do was to get rid of her books. She had some that she had read and reread several times, a few that we have kept, but that was a really difficult day when we boxed up hundreds of books.
Yeah, what I also found quite remarkable was because I guess you and Michelle had lived in a house, and since she knew she was dying, you guys had to get a new house. And I'm assuming you're living in that house now?
That's correct.
Yeah, and I mean, all the preparation in doing that, the paperwork, selling the old house, getting a new house, I mean, she wanted, in a way, to make sure that these affairs were settled before she left.
She absolutely did, and she was, even though she was very ill, she was a real dynamo during that whole period. I was amazed at how much she accomplished, and... She wanted everything to be right for me.
Yeah, and so dealing with the loss, I mean, I can't begin to assume what that was like. But in a way, it seemed like she wanted to make it easier for you, Kirk.
Absolutely, that was her goal. Absolutely, and she accomplished that.
And Karen, in the course of reading Michelle's writing, did you learn anything new about your sister?
That's an interesting question. I mean, Michelle and I talked a lot, and she had a very, very, very small circle of people who she really shared things with. I don't know that I learned much more about her. I guess, though, there was a level of understanding. I mean, I've always understood eating disorders to be a mental illness. I've always understood, the emotional pain that she was in. But I guess it's a bit abstract, you know, when you're not hearing the actual feelings. And I think probably the most wonderful part, you know, our publisher described it as, among other themes that, you know, around eating disorders and palliative care and health policy, she described it as a love letter to family and friends who'd supported her. And I think sometimes those things were, you know, hard to see sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're it's a weird sort of compliment when you're the person, you know, or you are the people that she feels safest with. Sometimes that was the hardest thing to be around. Because she could be angry with us or frustrated and those kinds of things. And her image management was so sophisticated that she didn't show a lot of that to other people unless it was in a work context, and then it was, you know, with right, you know, on her side kind of thing. So it was a love letter, and that was great.
Yeah, and you see how many lives she touched. Because, I mean, there's one entry, where one piece where she writes about when she was working in an office, one of her coworkers, I guess one of their parents had died, or a family member had died, and so Michelle goes into the office and says, you know, if there's anything I can do, shopping for you, cooking for you, or whatever, I'm here for you. I'll do whatever you need done. And Michelle forgets about this because, I mean, it's just a small moment in her own life. But when she has the blog, this coworker comes back and writes about how much that meant to her, and then Michelle writes about how much that meant to her, just the reaching out again. I mean, it says something about the character that Michelle had, and it's absolutely moving.
Absolutely, yeah. She had a lot of integrity.
Indeed, yeah. And I hope with this book, I mean, I guess that you guys will know that she'll touch so many more lives.
That's certainly the hope. She, you know, she, as I said, had a huge heart, and she would, you know, she would fight for you to the death. If there was something that you needed, it was in her power to help it or support it or provide it, she would do so. And you know, I think when we talked to her about broadening the audience, it really was her hope that would, you know, she calls it a cautionary tale. It's not a how to get better, because she never did.
Mm-hmm.
But she believed other people could, and she really wanted her words to, you know, if that would usher in an understanding and an ability to be cured to one person, then it would be worth it.
Kirk, she writes in the book about the way we ought to talk to people, not just those with anorexia, with bulimia, but those that are sick, those that are dying. What did she want from people that she encountered?
What did she want?
Yeah, I mean, she talks in the book about wanting just a new sort of language in terms of how we ask, say, how are you? Especially if you're sick, especially if you're dying.
Yeah. Oh, that's a difficult one for me to answer. I know that was something in a previous radio interview that the host brought up and actually read that entry, How Do I Feel? And, Karen, can you shed some light on this? Because I'm struggling here.
Sure. I think there were times when Michelle really struggled with having, you know, an honest answer to that. I feel crummy. I'm sick. I'm dying. I feel horrible. And And yet, you know, there's another, our other pieces where, you know, she talks about changing over her medications to things that are not just for pain, but actual palliative drugs that came later. And it gave her renewed strength. And she talks about, you know, if people ask her how she feels today, she's able to say in a clear, strong voice, "I feel great. I'm doing what I need to do." So, you know, what she wanted changed depending on her circumstance and how she was feeling at the time. But she did find it hard. She found it very difficult to say, you know, I feel crummy when someone was asking in a well-meaning way. She did have advice on how to talk to people who are sick or who are dying, but, you know, it wasn't always even consistent for her. Because she understood on the one hand that people needed to express their concerns.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to add that I had that experience going to work or wherever, and people would always ask, how is Michelle?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just didn't know what to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know what to say. I mean, we encounter people that are sick all the time, the people that are dying, and it... I guess we don't have the language or the shorthand, say, to make everything feel better, even and just to express our concern, even.
Well, and I think it's such a standard way to begin a conversation. How are
yeah.
you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we don't change it up when the circumstance changes because we don't have another script, and maybe that's something we need to work on.
Indeed. She wrote a post in March 21st, saying that it was her last post, but then she came back throughout April again. What happened there in terms of say, ending the blog?
Well, we had a visit from palliative care people and a counselor. The counselor always came with the nurse. Excuse me. And she basically, at one point in the conversation, said that she had an agenda and she was expressing concern that some of Michelle's writing was, I don't think was putting workers in danger, but they just wanted her to sort of temper it and not do anything that might identify people working on the program.
Mm. It affected her a lot in terms of she felt quite badly about it.
Well, she felt like the rug had been pulled out from under her because her blog was her lifeline.
Yeah. In the course of the writing of the blog, I mean, she must have heard from just a lot of people that she'd encountered through her life, and I mean, she even talks about that, how she needed to reply to every, I guess, email that she'd get.
Yeah, she got, you know, comments on the blog, and then she also got a lot of personal messages, and people emerged whom she hadn't heard from in a very long time sometimes, or who she'd heard from the week before. But I think she was shocked at the response that she got, particularly when she was talking about her eating disorders. You know, she had a lot of notice from people who called her brave, called her courageous, and, mm-hmm. and said it has given them the strength to deal with their demons. And it wasn't, you know, not necessarily eating disorders. There was one who talked about alcoholism and just other mental illnesses and addiction situations that you know, yeah, they could look at it and know they would, you know, they could be helped and be okay. And I think she was, you know, awed and humbled and so pleased to think that even in that moment she could see that there was a difference from her words.
So Kirk, what's the last year been like for you and for your family?
Well, we certainly miss Michelle a lot. I still have our two little white dogs that she loved very much, so that's a good reminder. But I think it's been cathartic for Karen and myself and others in the family to work on this project, to actually turn her blog into a book, and that feels good. It just feels like we've always had her here, and I think she'd be proud of about what we've done for her.
She'd have been pleased with the book, Karen, do you think?
Yes, I really think she would have. And I mean, the irony is I don't think it would have happened had she been here. There mm-hmm. would have always been a reason not to and concern. But I believe, you know, she knew how it was going to be received to a degree because of the response to her blog. Mm-hmm. And I think she'd be thrilled.
As I said earlier, she writes so beautifully. And she's touched my life, certainly, in the course of reading it. And I'm sure she will touch so many more lives because of this book. And you both deserve great congratulations for getting this out there. And I so appreciate your time today and talking to me about her. It's a fine tribute. She's inspiring, and it illuminates a lot, not just about this condition, but about just how we talk to one another. So, Kirk and Karen, thanks for this.
Thank you, Joe.
The book is called Shell, a Memoir, One Woman's Final Year After a Lifelong Struggle with Anorexia and Bulimia. It's from Lifetree Media. Kirk Mason and Karen Fellow join me on the line from Victoria in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.